Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
I'm doing great, Blake. It feels weird because I spent so many months preparing for the 2026 NFL draft and doing so many hours of film study and breaking down these players. And now I can turn the page. I'm fully geared up, locked in on preparing for the 2027 NFL draft, the 2026 season. It's all pointing towards the college football season now, but I'm doing pretty good. It's nice that I can put the draft class behind me.
All right, let's get into a little bit of the draft. What are the biggest surprises for you?
The Jermaine McCoy situation was pretty surprising. I really thought that he was going to go much earlier. The whole knee situation that came out with him and his recovery is awfully concerning. There's a chance that he might not play football again. And it really plays into what we kept talking about every single week with Tennessee when we were wondering when the heck he was going to come back. I don't really know what to expect here, but the Raiders might have gotten a all-pro in the fourth round, which is absolutely insane to say. The other two is Ty Simpson going as early as he did. He landed in the best possible situation for him to succeed. I don't agree with all the people that have been criticizing the Rams for selecting him that high, because I think in a couple of years, we're going to be looking at that completely differently. Those are probably the two biggest.
2 weeks ago on the SEC Believe channel, it was me and Jason Campbell. Mm-hmm. And we had a long 30-minute conversation about Ty Simpson. And I brought up Ty Simpson was going to the Rams and got laughed at over and really? Over again. Yes, multiple times. Because here's what I know about people. Joe, if your son became a 5-star quarterback and went to LSU, what is the chances of I knowing his every move? Now, Les Snead and Ty Simpson's dad are very close. Hmm.
So that was never talked about. That was never talked about.
Well, you got Les Snead on the sidelines at a Bama game this year. What's that about? What's that about? GMs on the sidelines of a game? Hmm. What's that about? So, I mean, me and Jason talked about it. That's elite. I got to be real with you. It was the least surprising thing to me. However, you know what the most surprising thing to me was? How in the good world does Caleb Downs go from Bama to Ohio State to the Cowboys?
And I know.
He's with the three arguably biggest franchises, quote unquote, in college and in the NFL.
Well, those that were rooting for him don't need to buy any new gear.
Oh, look at you. Look at you already with the jokes. But how is it that you know the whole meme of like Jesse from Breaking Bad's like he can't keep getting away with it? He can't keep getting away with it. How do you go to those three premier schools and then now the are two premier schools and now the NFL? I was surprised he fell that far, to be honest with you. I was surprised that David Bailey went above Arvell Reese. I was a little shocked. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of players that I was shocked in the later rounds. Like, I couldn't believe that fell. Are there anybody, like, in later rounds that you were surprised that fell?
Well, the whole quarterback pecking order was super weird. Ethan Kelly McManus, the Rutgers quarterback, went ahead of Garrett Nussmeier, which was completely nuts. You and I were texting about this from – and this is nothing from on your end. From what I had heard is that there was not a lot of accountability that was taken by him in the pre-draft process in interviews. And a lot of the things in terms of his preparation and focus during the season, I think a lot of NFL teams sniffed through that. And I also believe that what happened here and the reason why he fell so much is that if you're going to be a backup, you need to be somebody that is, it's always referred to your backup quarterback, you need to be a good hang. You need to be somebody that guys want to be around, but you also need to be a second coach. I'm not saying that Garrett Nussmeier needs to be coaching up Patrick Mahomes, but the way that that works is that, you know, he's going to be watching the games and evaluating and noticing things almost like he's a coordinator on the sideline, an analyst on the sideline, to be able to spot things. It just, you need somebody that's going to be really cerebral. And I don't think that Garrett Nussmeier really is that. I think that it was just assumed because he's a coach's son and his dad's the OC for the Saints that was enough for him to get drafted highly. I think a lot of NFL teams cut through that BS, and that was why he fell as far as he did in the seventh round. I mean, he might not even stick on that roster.
I'm staying away from it because I told people this was coming.
Yeah, this is all my own end. There's nothing that you
know. I'm staying away from it because, I mean, I told people, and you know this better than I told, like, it's not happening. You can't have things off the field along with some bad play on the field and think that you're going to get drafted that high. So it was never going to happen. And so I wasn't surprised by Taylen Green going ahead of him, the Rutgers kid, the San Diego State or North Dakota State kid. I was surprised because, look, Garrett is a lot of things. Not being better than those two kids is that's not one of them. Like, the interceptions are the interceptions. The things are the things. I would have taken Taylen Green ahead of him too because of, look, he could play at tight end. He could put on weight. He's a freak of an athlete. You can use him in special stuff and packages. That doesn't surprise me. Those two dudes going ahead of him did surprise me, to say the least. I was surprised at how many tight ends came off the board.
There were a lot of them. There were a lot of AI-generated tight ends that were selected that I didn't. This is one of the weirdest drafts.
The kid from Houston, Koziel.
Tanner Koziel.
Koziel. I'm sorry. 3-4 of the tight ends that went above him, it's a joke. It is a joke. Because then you haven't watched shit. Oh, we played in the Big 12. Okay. Well, you just drafted 6 Texas Tech defenders, and you've seen him on the end line of scrimmage against David Bailey, and you can go pop that film on. So, like, it's not as if that he was getting ransacked. So I'm like, some of these picks, Joe, I got to be real with you. I think after round 5, maybe midway through round 5, teams started punting. Who's a good athlete? We're going to take good athletes. And that was it.
Well, and I also, I'm kind of curious to find out. A lot of times what happens when you get really late in the draft, players will tell, agents will tell teams not to draft them because they want to be able to pick where they go. I think that a lot of kids were doing that. And I think that a lot of teams were just picking, they really were picking random dudes. This was one of the weakest and thinnest draft classes that we've seen. But one bit that is being misconstrued is that a lot of people are assuming that this is something to do with NIL and the transfer portal, and that there's, you know, we're going to have draft classes like this. It was just one bad year. Next year's class is going to completely reset things.
So it was all COVID. Well, everybody wants to blame NIL and the portal. Mm-hmm. I can name 5 draft classes where there was almost entire first round's worth of picks that, Joe, not only did you not have any Hall of Famers in it, Joe, there's some in the early 2000s and mid 2000s where none of them made Pro Bowls.
I want to say it was the 2013 draft. Was it the Eric Fisher?
The Eric Fisher draft.
Luke Jokel draft. That was a really bad draft.
So again, don't blame NIL and the portal for stuff that we've seen before. Now, the only other thing that I'd say, I was a little surprised by the Jets taking another tight end with Mason Taylor, but I'd take Sadiq too. I thought it was an interesting stat put out by ESPN. Did you know that over 1,800 plays came out of 13 personnel in the NFL last year?
Teams are running a lot of tight end sets, heavy tight end sets, and you need that move piece. If you can get an elite athlete as your F, you can do some really creative shit.
And Sadiq can do that. But here was the steal of the draft. You ready? And it's not close. How in the world is Pittsburgh on the phone with Mekhi Lemon?
Oh, this is literally a steal.
Philly, who's in the same damn state as them, and the draft's being held in Pittsburgh, trades ahead And I know, I understand everybody's like the philosophy of AJ Brown and Mekhi Lemon is the steal of the draft here. And everybody's like the pre-interview and him acting the way he did. I don't give two shits how he acts. I could give a shit. So again, do you realize what ESPN also published? Do you know how many times that Jalen Hurts targets the slot and over the middle? Mm-hmm. He doesn't like throwing to the boundary. So I'm like, that was the craziest story of all in probably all of this.
Well, and them getting Stowers too, I think is really interesting because I wonder if they just straight up have Stowers play receiver and he could be the replacement for AJ Brown in this offense. He's as athletic as him. He's got a similar physical profile. But you know that the Mekhi Lemon thing, the rumor is, I think it was Nick Harris in Dallas had reported this, that basically what happened was that there were a lot of common people that were familiar with one another in the Steelers front office and the Steelers coaching staff, as well as the Dallas one, because of, you know, the connections between the coaching staffs with McCarthy going to the Steelers. And apparently someone like offhandedly had told the Dallas someone in the Dallas front office that they were going to take Mekhi Lemon when their pick came up. So Dallas called Philly and said, "We know that you want him. Do you want to trade up here?" That they really
your own division.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's going to happen if Mekhi Lemon goes off?
Well, that's a good,
I mean, it's in your own division. Now I will say this too. Okay. Never pass Jerry Jones on being petty. But to trade him in, to do the trade and do it inside your own division does nothing for Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You want to get back at Mike McCarthy that bad? Joe, you're mad at him that much that you would risk Mekhi Lemon? You know, the last time a slot receiver fell in the draft this far that I can remember that I thought would go in the top 10, his name was Justin Jefferson. In the 20s? Are you kidding me? That's not even... That's a complete joke. I did like Casey Concepcion, by the way, to the Browns. Who do you think won the draft? Now, I listen to y'all's pod, but
yeah,
everybody here, who do you think won the draft?
The best draft class was the Panthers class, getting Freeling.
I completely agree.
Getting Lee Hunter, the Texas Tech nose tackle, who's really freaking good. They also got, I'm blanking on some of the other kids. Oh, they got Brazel. I really like the Brazel pick. Sam Hesh, the Kansas State center, is a really, really good football player. And Will Lee, as well as Akeem Wheatley. I mean, across the board, their class might have come away with multiple starters. We could talk about other classes, but that Panthers class was really good. I think that they're ready to establish some consistency.
I like the Panthers class. I got to... Well, let me ask you, who do you think lost it?
Jaguars class was bad, dude. The Jaguars class was so bad.
Let's talk about the Jags for just a minute. I did not understand the Nate...
Bokerker, I think. Bokerker is his last name.
Bokerker, the tight end. I didn't understand that. They went back-to-back A&M picks. I just did not get that at all. I got to be real with you, though. I really, and I mean really, liked the class that did come out of Baltimore because of the fact they got Ione from Penn State. I thought Zion Young, I'm like, damn. And then you went and got Jacoby Lane, and then you got Elijah Surratt, and I'm like, dude, they have some weapons here, but I got to be I know you don't really necessarily like A.J. Halsey as much as I do, but to get C.J. Allen and A.J. Halsey and then to get Farmer at guard,
yeah,
I really liked it. I really liked theirs too. There was a lot of really good draft classes. Before we get out of here on this part, I don't know what to think about the Raiders, by the way.
No, I like this Raiders class, dude. They nailed across the board, I think, coming away with guys that could be key contributors for them. They didn't really get any receivers, which is the big thing that's going to be concerning. But, dude, I think they're going to run the hell out of the football. You added Trey Zune. Mike Washington is going to be your Zach Charbonnet and Ashton Jeanty is going to be your Kenneth Walker, and you're going to be more explosive than that tandem was in Seattle. I think that them also landing Trayden Stukes and Jermaine McCoy, that secondary gets a huge upgrade.
They got Jadarian Price, first time two backs gone in the first round, I think, since 1968. That's insane,
too. The last time was Arkansas with Felix Jones and with Darren McFadden. So
the ESPN, the 68 thing wasn't true.
No, that was that was wrong. Reuben Bain's walk up when he got picked was probably one of the coolest things. He was so pissed.
Well, they got a freaking haul. They got Bane, Trotter, and Scott from Miami.
Yep. Yeah, Keontae Scott. They decided to pick the guys that were successful, the last good team in the state of Florida. They just said, you know, we're going to take two big players.
Josiah Trotter is a steal in the second round.
I
got to ask you before we move on.
Okay.
How about them Giants? We're going to draft a man with a herniated disc. Let's go.
All right, dude. Malino is fine, man. Malino is going to be okay. He's going to be a great card. I legitimately don't know what they're going to do defensively. It's either going to be really creative and disruptive, or Arvell Reese is going to wasted.
I don't. The whole thing with Thibodeau and New Orleans.
They got to trade him. It's so stupid.
Well, hold on. I saw a lot of people coming out there and saying that shit's not true. I'll just tell you right now, that's bullshit, because the Saints have been calling on him. And I do think getting Reese and getting – what are you talking about with Malanoa? As I was just joking, you got two dudes in the top 10 who arguably could be the best edge guy and can move in different slots and potentially the best offensive lineman for a young quarterback. I mean, I was messing with you with Malachi Fields, the Colton Hood thing. It was what it was. You arguably got the two best dudes on the line of scrimmage in this draft, and you think they did bad? I'm sorry. Go suck a titty nipple, because that's BS. I'm sorry. Like miss me with everything else that happened in that draft. Come on, dude. If Malanoa is ready to go, he's a really good offensive lineman, and Reese is a dog.
Malinois is the big one for me, because if they had taken Malinois at 5, I would have been just as excited. Just the thing, I love Reese, but the thing is that he's an off-ball linebacker that's a really, really productive blitzer, and I'm just a little fearful that when you have two really talented pass rushers with Brian Burns and Abdul Carter, and then a third rotational guy in Kayvon Thibodeau, they're not going to be able to blitz him very much. So he's just going to be playing off-ball linebacker, and I don't know if that's
the
best way to maximize him.
Well, here's the thing. Who's their head coach?
It's Harbaugh.
And what did Harbaugh do in Baltimore? He would go and get dudes from Bama all of the time that had a high blitz percentage and a high blitz rate, and they would be highly successful. Two bookends and a guy in the middle. I'm sorry, but
I'm trusting him. I'm just a little nervous. I'm just going to be really pissed if at the end of the season we look at Arvell Reese's production and it's like, why was he dropping in coverage 60% of the time on third down? Fair. That's not an effective use of his skill set.
Well, I got to be real with you. I wasn't going to say. I think Philly might have won it. How you getting Lemon, Stowers, and Markell Bell?
Markell Bell was overdrafted, man. Markell Bell was overdrafted. I'm sorry. I don't like Markell Bell as a prospect. He is stiff and he's too tall and he can't bend and his feet are slow.
I'll give you $1,000 to do a pass rush move on him right now.
Okay. I'm not an NFL pass rusher. So that's a moot point. They're going to run the wishbone though. You watch. They have three quarterbacks that can be on the field at once, with Cole Payton, the North Dakota State kid, who's the next Taysom Hill. They've got Jalen Hurts. And Eli Stowers is a former quarterback.
I thought that one was unique. I thought that one was very unique. I also saw Eli Stowers have a baseball throw at third base from at 92 miles an hour across the diamond. So, dude can throw it a little bit.
Amen.
You can toss it. All right. We got a lot to go and do here. Everyone, do us a favor. Hit the like and share. Share all those groups if you're on Facebook and to all those social media pages. You're watching us, listen to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Every Ruffino and Joe show is brought to our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FD Sportsbook app today. Use your mobile device in doing so. When you download the app, go over to FanDuel.com/RG for more details and set those preferences. Joe, some big recruiting news coming out of the weekend as Elijah Haven, the number one recruit in the country, also the number one recruit in the great state of Louisiana, has committed to Kalen DeBoer and Alabama. Your thoughts on Elijah Haven going to, which you and I have had conversations probably about him for over 3 years. Your thoughts on Elijah Haven committing to Alabama?
Yeah, I'm sure, first and foremost, that Lane Kiffin will probably want to still take some swings here to see if they can keep him in state. But
I don't know that.
You don't think so? You don't
know
that Rouge kid?
Because the first offer that Lane Kiffin made in the 2027 class 3 years ago was Peyton Houston.
All right, it's a fair point. Well, he's going to Bama, number one quarterback on 24/7's board, number two overall recruit as well. I remember when I watched this kid last summer, Ryan Roberts and I, my co-host, did a video on him, and we watched it, and it was unbelievable watching his tape as a sophomore. We were watching his sophomore film. Like, this kid is, not to be too hyperbolic, a reincarnation of Vince Young. I see a lot of, for a youngster, for him to be built the way that he is as a junior, his film from this past year when I was watching it earlier today, he's built like a college junior, the way that he's filled out his frame. It's hilarious watching him go against these dudes that are going to be in fraternities in a year. He's zipping the ball over their head. He's running past them. He's like double their size. He is a really gifted player. And the touch that you get from him for a guy that is as young as he is really hard to come by. If he's one of these recruits that we see that gets on the field early, it wouldn't shock me. But the big talking point about here, Blake, is the established culture that Kalen DeBoer has. Man, what a freaking week for Kalen DeBoer. He gets the announcement on his extension. It's locked in. No more worries about being on the hot seat. And then he gets the commitment from Elijah Haven. This is the second big-time quarterback that he is going to be theoretically bringing in if he signs on signing day. Because Keelan Russell was the number two overall quarterback in 2025, and we think he might start for your team this year. And if by the time that he's done and he's moving on in the NFL, the guy that you get to turn to is another freakishly athletically gifted kid in Elijah Haven, that's nuts. But the other part with this too, that's kind of a side point, they have done a really good job with their depth at quarterback as well, because in 2026, they got Jet Tamala and Taden Kawa. Tamala was the fourth ranked quarterback in 2026. Kawa was 66, and they also got Trent Seaborn committed in 2027, who's the 14th ranked quarterback. Not only are they taking big swings at the top, but they're also doing a really good job of adding depth to the room. So there's really healthy competition. Blake, DeBoer is killing it right now in recruiting. Even though this class is ranked 34th on 24/7, they only have five commits. This is the type of guy that you get, and a bunch of other dudes start flowing in.
I don't think he's Vince Young. I think he's Donovan McNabb.
Well, he'd have to get a lot heavier. Donovan McNabb was a big dude.
Well, he's going to get heavier. You can't. He's not going to sit at that frame and not get bigger and heavier. I just think from an athletic standpoint, that too, I think he is more, because he throws the shit out of the football. I think Elijah Haven is by far the best pocket guy in this class because he can make every single throw. We saw in the state championship game here in the great state of Louisiana, Joe, him throwing outside the numbers, 30, 40 yards down the field. I think he's done a lot better from a season ago in processing and how he's processing things moving forward. I do think there's some footwork things that he needs to clean up. I do think there's times, and even in high school, where he thinks his ability will get him out of the situation, considering the level of people that he is playing in at Dunham. But normally 9 times out of 10, it does. I just don't know if anybody has the size and skill set and can spin it the way that he can. Now, there was some talk, obviously, about LSU and Kiffin. I don't know, Joe, if he fits into what Lane does. And I don't know if Pop Houston, who is another top 10 quarterback who Tom Loy brought up was the best quarterback that he had seen in the Elite 11 if it doesn't fit his system more. I do think Louisiana has two premier quarterbacks. I think they have, you know, Elijah Haven and Peyton Houston's getting knocked because of the size. With that part being said, in recruiting, you never say never. But if you want somebody that I think has got one of the best shoulders on his head, he comes from a fantastic family, he can spin it better than anybody in this class. He, like you said, Joe, I was really surprised going from sophomore year to junior year how much more touch he put on the ball and how much better he sat in the pocket. Because, look, as a sophomore, I mean, you can just go to the state championship game. I mean, he did not want to get hit at all, and he wouldn't stay in that pocket. Well, now he is, and he's making big-time throws. He runs the ball very effectively. He's extremely physical, and that's why he's the number one, number two overall player in the 2027 class, considering where you want to look. I think he's a great player, but I think the mental makeup is where, you know, you see the physicality traits. I think the mental makeup is where I would probably separate him from most, because I think he has it. And listen, he, you know, around here, he walks on somewhat part of this cloud, because if you realize, he wasn't the only kid in Baton Rouge that was a number one overall prospect. Lamar Brown also held that title too. And so I think, Joe, what you're seeing here from a Louisiana who's done this a lot, whether it be Leonard Fournette or Lamar Brown last year, or whether it's Elijah Haven, a lot of those kids moving from New Orleans area, coming to Baton Rouge, and they're producing those. And I think that that is kind of the part of where, you know, I wonder if Lane kind of gets into that. In reference to Elijah Haven, I don't want to say this one's over, but I think that Alabama has done a fantastic job here and will continue to hold on to this one, because I don't know if LSU is going to move off of Pop Houston, nor do I completely think that they should at the current moment, considering how both styles of offenses are run, and I think both of them fit. But again, this kid can do it all, and that's why he sits where he sits.
Well, and the other thing, too, that has been changing a lot in the recruiting industry is that – or recruiting world industry wasn't the word I was looking for. A lot of times these kids that are – we're expecting them, they commit in the summer, and we're kind of expecting, oh, that's not going to stick. Because of NIL – commitments, especially for quarterbacks,
don't really move that much. I mean, Dylan Raiola,
Raiola is an anomaly, and he also was before the market for how NIL affects recruiting started to establish and change. Mm-hmm. I think that other positions, it's a lot easier, like very last second, to start throwing big contracts when, say, you're a team that needs an offensive lineman, you need a defensive lineman, there's a kid that you think they can get on the field early. You might be a little more desperate because you don't know what you're going to get in the transfer portal. But, dude, quarterbacks, when they commit, a lot of the times these guys, they stay committed. Keyshawn Henderson is a really good example. He was the number one quarterback last year on 24/7's board, and he sticked with Houston. He stuck with Houston. He ended up going to Houston. He's at Houston right now. I think that, for your point, I would be really stunned if he changed his mind and he decommitted. We're just not getting a lot of these quarterbacks pivoting and going elsewhere. All the top guys from last year, most of them ended up going with the school that they committed to initially over the summer. And that's really big for Alabama. This always happens. The second that Alabama doesn't have like a blue chip guy in a class, everybody already starts bringing up, oh man, Kalen DeBoer is doing a really crap job in recruiting. He's not doing an effective enough job. They're 34th. And lo and behold, you get Haven. That is the beacon for a class. That mm-hmm. is the big signal that you're putting at the top of your class for all the other players to flow in that are considering going to Alabama. Because when you have a quarterback like this, they're on the phone too. They want to win. They're DMing guys. They're calling dudes. They're playing video games with them. They're at these camps. They're recruiting, and they become a part of the coaching staff. Elijah Haven committing now at the very, very beginning of the summer is so huge with the timeline of all these commitments that happen in July. A lot of them will happen in August. Getting Haven in the boat and locked in is huge for what DeBoer is going to be able to build for this next upcoming recruiting class.
Yeah, and Bama's led this for a long time. I mean, there's been no secret about this. They've done a fantastic job at in this recruitment and going and getting them. I'll just continue to say style. The styles match here. Like I don't mean this in a wrong way. So just it's not intended to. I feel like Pop Houston fits better with Lane Kiffin from a mentality standpoint. I think Elijah Haven fits more from a mentality standpoint with Kalen DeBoer. That, to be completely blunt with you, I don't know if Elijah would succeed necessarily in how Lane and company do things. This place is very edgy. Okay. Like, let me give an example. Lane was asked a question the other day about what you keep saying Louisiana's different. What about it? It's the deep South, but everybody down here has got edge. You literally before the show in a non-related matter told me to back off that edge. And so what I mean is by, I feel like Pop has that. I'm not saying that Elijah doesn't, He doesn't show it. That's what made Jaden Daniels so uniquely different here or there. Regardless of all of that, I agree with you. I think this is moderately done unless all hell broke loose. But they got the best quarterback, arguably, in the entire country, and he can do every single little thing. And he's going to come in there and push people. He will push everybody because he can make every throw.
Right. The big bit with him is that by the time he's a freshman, Keelan Russell will be a
redshirt sophomore.
So he'll probably
basically a junior.
Yeah, he'll be getting calls from the NFL. And Haven, if he's ready to go, will probably take over the mantle in a couple of years, kind of like Keelan Russell is about to do right now, like we're expecting. But there is just a very easy to the point of why Haven fits better in the Alabama offense, where you do bring up a good point. Look at the quarterbacks that that Lane Kiffin has had in his offenses. They have been guys that have maybe been a little bit on the smaller side. You have a very obvious path of all the dudes that
Trinidad, Jackson, right. Matt Corral. I mean,
right. But to the point of why this is a perfect fit for Alabama's offense, and we're talking about LSU, but this was also a race that was happening with Georgia. I think that there's a more tangible for him. Yeah, there's a much more tangible, clear plug-in. This was so obvious that he was going to pick Bama, because what is similar about him to Gunnar Stockton and a Carson Beck and a Stetson Bennett? There's nothing. Nothing. Even Dylan Raiola, who was once committed there, there's no comparison.
I'll be real with you. I never once felt like Georgia had a remote chance. If you want me to be blunt on them.
To be dead ass with you, because obviously I've been
don't be live ass.
I've been very embedded in the draft coverage, but I've been paying close attention to Haven's commitment and this what this was coming down to. I didn't know who else was like really in the race besides Alabama.
Florida was got in the mix there for a minute.
Yeah.
Do I think LSU was asked if they want to compete with it? And I think LSU said no. I think it was a two-team race. When it's all said and done, I don't think he was ever going to entertain Georgia, no. That's why I hadn't brought him up. He wasn't entertaining Georgia. I mean, don't let that shit be fooled. Don't let it fool you. All right, let's move on here. Everybody do us a favor. Subscribe down below on the YouTube channel. Joe, we had a pair of spring games that happened this weekend as well that kind of got lost in the shuffle, but not by us. The NFL cannot hurt me and you watching these spring games. It's Notre Dame took on Notre Dame this weekend. Joe, a lot coming out of this Notre Dame spring game. A lot of overreactions, I feel like, are coming out of this Notre Dame spring game. Regardless of that, what are your thoughts on what you saw from Notre Dame this weekend?
Yeah, Blake, I'm going to address one of those overreactions in a second, in relation to a positive spin on it that I think a lot of people are overlooking. First major big takeaway for me, Blake, I thought it was so visible the depth and the talent that they have at wide receiver. This is the best receiver group that I have ever seen at Notre Dame that I can remember. Like, even when they had Michael Floyd and when they had Will Fuller and all those different years, they didn't have that kind of this kind of depth. Micah Gilbert,
definitely more athletic, and you can't deny that at all.
No. There are a lot of unique body types that I think are going to contribute and make some seriously big plays for this team this upcoming year. I want to learn who's going to be that alpha of the group if they have one. Maybe it's Quincy Porter once he's back healthy and on the field. But we got to see Mylon Graham make people miss. We got to see Micah Gilbert emerge and make some big plays. We got to see Devin Fitzgerald, Larry Fitzgerald's son, who has been making a ton of noise during spring practices, follow that up with a number of big plays where he created separation and he came down with some big catches. We also got Elijah Burris, who's Plaxico Burris' son, make some big plays as well. There are so many names that we keep talking about. There's like 6-7 receivers that looked really good. This is a very rare territory for Notre Dame to be in, to have this much talent at receiver. It just all comes to which guys emerge as just being talented into real-time playmakers. Can they have multiple 700-yard guys? Can they have a 1,000-yard guy? That's the big step forward. A lot of people were talking about
C.J. Carr throwing the football.
Okay. So a lot of people were talking about C.J. Carr's inconsistency in this game. He was up and down. Blake, I feel like that this is more of an indication of what they have going on in their secondary. During fall camp last year, during the quarterback competition, it was brought up multiple times that C.J. Carr was struggling. He kept turning the ball over. He couldn't find easy completions. He was having a really difficult time. One of the things that I said on this show was that to me is not an indictment on C.J. Carr. It is an indication that there's just so much talent in their secondary that it's freaking impossible to complete passes in practice. And I feel like we had an actual visible example of that during the spring game, because I saw guys flying all over the field. I saw a lot of high impact guys that were not even the go-to names that we usually talk about. Leonard Moore didn't play in this game. Jaden Sanders, who came in the transfer portal, was all over the field making plays. We got to see some of the youngsters, Ethan Long and Joey O'Brien, step on the field.
Adon Shuler didn't play either, correct?
No, Shuler played.
Okay.
Adon Shuler
played. It was more Christian Gray was out there, but Moore didn't go. Did Bowen go? I don't think Bowen went.
I don't believe so. I believe that they cut to him, unless I'm mixing up with somebody else. I believe they cut to him and talked to him on the sideline. But
that's besides
the point, though. I think that, Blake, that this is more to do with the challenge that C.J. Carr has every single day going up against this group. And I would hope that translates to him being successful in games because he's so battle-tested. I commend him for showing a lot of aggressiveness because he showed some willingness to take shots. He just has to establish some chemistry and some rhythm with his receivers.
I did like when you got down to the red zone twice, you were able to just line up and run the football. You know, I mean, so the Williams touchdown, you're able to just line up and he had a physical run. I get that you weren't really trying to bring anybody to the ground.
It was thud.
It was pretty much thud. I mean, a couple times guys got tackled. But in reference to C.J. Carr, so the narrative was last weekend in an open scrimmage, he completely tore up Chris Ash. It tore this defense alive. Okay. So if we're to believe that that is the case, and in an open scrimmage last Saturday, he tore them a new one. Chris Ash, it seemed as if in a spring game, took this one a little personal. The only complaint that I had about them defensively is, why are you sending that much pressure in a spring game? Like, you know, Joe, I mean, it's not that it's a problem. Why don't you just go base and just run man in quarters and let's call it a day because it's a spring game that doesn't matter? Why are you sending the house? I mean, because there was the time where he, you know, on the slant, they got batted up in the air. Joe, they send six guys. Well, you have five to block. And CJ's got to make a quick decision, gets batted up in the air, and it gets picked by Snead. Who gives a shit? Got batted up in the air. But I don't think that they looked as crisp, but I also don't think that they showed anything worth a damn offensively. They ran inside zone. They ran outside zone. They ran a couple of quick slants and hitches. Joe, the only other route that I saw that was worth a damn was that Fitzgerald ran a double move that wound up resulting in a touchdown. I don't know what necessarily what you want me to take from that, really. Now, in reference to them defensively, yeah, they're going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem. Now, in reference to Carr, Joe, I don't know. I don't feel like I saw enough. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I saw enough to say that he regressed by any means, which is kind of the narrative that some wanted to push out there. But to the opposite part of that, I also didn't see anything where I'm like, oh, shit. Like, oh, damn. But it's a spring game. Like, what specifically did you want me to take of that? Again, I think the biggest thing for me is that, you know, people were getting on the offensive line and saying some things about that. But you got into the red zone twice and you ran the ball right at them and they couldn't do shit. And I think that's the part where I'm just like, okay, well, if I can get that where it actually matters, I'm fine with it.
Well, Blake, this is for me why I don't really harp closely on quarterback performances in spring games, because the quarterback position is like the one spot where you're not going to be able to like really flash. When guys struggle, it's just like going out there and at practice and having a bad day of practice. I thought that Carr showed that he was, and somebody, I saw somebody in the comments say, I forget where it was, that knew it was a meaningless scrimmage. That was kind of how I felt like Carr was approaching it. Not like, oh, this is BS, I don't really care that I'm out here. It looked like he was going out there and he just decided, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to take some shots. You mentioned some of the aggressiveness defensively to get in his face. I think that they were trying to make things difficult for him. I think that they were trying to make things difficult for him. And I think that he was willing to play freely. He does need to clean stuff up. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a major issue, but I am always the type of person that I don't harp on quarterback play. And instead, I look for, all right, which skill position players can make some big plays? How does the D-line, O-line look? Who's getting the most push? Are there any youngsters that emerge and maybe make some big plays like Devin Fitzgerald did? I'll tell you what, though. Anias Williams, who I thought was going to play a pretty big role before Sider came in as the running backs coach and changed the rotation where it was just two running backs and Williams got taken out of the mix, he clearly spent the entire season in the weight room because he got big as shit. He was like a 200-pound running back. He looks like at least 215, maybe bigger than that. I think that that physicality that he added to his frame, and he only had 38 yards on 10 carries, he didn't get to break any tackles because it was thud tempo. You weren't actually tackling to the ground. I wonder how much more he would have produced if he actually broke some tackles.
The red zone situations with the running backs, even though it's thud and linebackers are hitting them and falling backwards, spoke volumes. And I don't really know, like, what you're talking about, you're eliminating the run game. They had no run game. They had none.
You can't run the ball when it's thud. It's impossible.
Right. And here's another thing, too. Here's what I saw from Notre Dame that I think Notre Dame fans need to relax on. Five dudes don't block six. It's simple math. So when some of these guys are having to make throws with pressure being sent off the edge or pressure being sent up the middle, I'm not really worried about that. What I did think was I would rather have CJ Carr to go in there and make the right decisions versus making decisions in reference to him saying, all right, well, I'm going to push the envelope. Because there, you're just basically there to show on display of what we're doing. And you're there to show the growth. I didn't like the decisions by Chris Ash, if you want me to be blunt. And I thought Marcus Freeman should have railed him back. Because someone's going to look at that spring game and be like, Joe, the third down throw that Carr had that fell incomplete, I'm pretty sure I don't remember the receiver. Why are you putting everybody on the line of scrimmage?
Well, okay, but here's the only thing, though, is
no, you don't do that in a spring game. I'm sorry.
The offense was – the scoring was wonky, and the offense was vastly outscoring the defense, and Freeman has been to a degree known in these settings to, like, try to make the game tight, and I think that he was trying to create a late-game situation.
Like he did with the field goal.
Yeah, I think that that was part of it. I think because you even – they panned him on the sideline – and they were trying to talk to him on the sideline, and he was very distracted.
He didn't even know. He didn't even know Snead picked it off. Did you see?
Well, I did, but there were a couple of instances where he was like shouting. I was like, oh, that was a sack. That was a sack. Like, he was trying to get points for the defense in order to make the game closer in the second half. So I think that was maybe part of it. Maybe that was the intention to ratchet things up a little bit. Look, I think that the main takeaway here, Blake, is that a lot of people are hyped up about what they have coming into the year defensively. And the defensive line rotation also looks really dangerous as well, because the offensive line, I don't think, is a liability. I just think that they got pushed around because they're figuring out their new look O-line with Knapp moving to guard and Black moving to tackle. Gurbi Lambert was out, and then assuming that Jagasaw, when he returns, he's going to be one of your starting guards. So I think that the D-line doing what they did, the defense doing what they did, is the main takeaway here, and it's been the main talking point. There's experience, there's depth, there's talent. They're going to be able to win games with their defense. Their defense is going to be hopefully better than it was last year.
Oh, it definitely is going to be better. I still like the way they ran the ball in the red zone, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, guys, you do realize this is a glorified two-hand touch. That's the thing that I just didn't understand, like, why Notre Dame people were freaking out. Like, what if dudes are going to break some tackles? What if they get, instead of 2 yards, what if they get five? I mean, like, what, you know, maybe I'm just losing my mind here. All right. Let's move on. Not the only spring game, but Joe, Dan Lanning and Oregon also had their spring game, four quarters of 15 minutes, but the clock constantly rolling the entire time. I got to be real with you. I felt like to start off the day for Oregon's spring game was complete and poetic justice having Evan Stewart catch the first pass.
I think it's a really, really good way of putting that.
Mm-hmm. So what were your thoughts? I mean, Evan Stewart did wind up having a fade route for a touchdown and look good doing it. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of conversations that you and I have on that one. Your thoughts coming out of Oregon, that seemed like there was another defensive domination this spring coming out of Oregon.
Yeah, look, I know that a lot of people, and I was reading Duck Territory on 24/7 Sports that was digging into like what stood out from their end after I watched it. And a lot of the commentary was about how the offensive line had a rough performance, but contextualizing why they struggled as much as they did. They gave up 10 sacks, but as it was pointed out, when you get tagged, that's a sack. Guys like Dante Moore and Akili Smith Jr. and Raiola, who are pretty elusive in the pocket, they're going to be able to break a lot of those sacks. So I wouldn't look at the 10 sacks if you're an outsider that you don't like Oregon and you're trying to look for a reason to be like, oh, Oregon's offensive line sucks. Well, that's just not the case. I think that this game was a really good example of their defensive line just being comically deep. I mean, Aiden Breland, the 6'5" kid, being a backup player for you behind Amari Washington, to now be able to add him into the rotation, he was a monster. This front is, and we keep saying this, and it's become redundant and it's become a cliche, you are creating a Western version of Georgia. This is one of the best recruited, deepest defensive lines that I've seen in the modern version of college football with the transfer portal and NIL. It is hard to get this many bodies, and they were manhandling every single Oregon offensive lineman that was out there. The other big thing for me, you mentioned Evan Stewart. Dude, this was a huge holy hell moment watching DK Moore and Evan Stewart make some big plays. Not to mention the fact that you've got DeCorian cooking Brandon Finney, who we've highlighted as one of the best corners in the country. That just goes to show how much better DeCorian Moore is since last year and how he's going to look when he's fully healthy. Blake, I think that the big storyline, that not really what we're taking away from the spring game, but we're getting a reminder of, a big reason to buy into what Oregon can do this year is that wide receiver tandem. That is going to be one of the best wide receiver tandems with some youngsters that need to step up underneath them as potential third and fourth options in the receiver room. There's a lot of talent, and I think they're going to be able to be really explosive when last year they had to rely pretty heavily on the run game.
Well, and they had to rely on a true freshman too that wasn't DeCorian Moore, and that's Jeremiah McClellan. And look, you went and got Iverson Hooks that can play in that slot role for you, where DK and Evan Stewart can play along the boundary. And I think that, look, there are glimpses that you look for in the spring game, right? Like you want to see specific level things. I thought that Oregon had everything last year, maybe offensive line, not so much, but they had everything to I don't want to say compete with Indiana, but make that even closer. Well, their biggest problem last year was that they couldn't get separation with Sadiq alone. They couldn't keep just throwing him the football. And you had to rely on Jeremiah McClellan. Now, you're replacing a really good tight end in Sadiq, who, by the way, got drafted by the Jets. But I did feel like that the biggest takeaway, everybody wants to talk about the 10 sacks, to your point. They want to talk about the defense dominating. It was kind of lackluster. The clock kept running. Like, I get all of that. But I thought that Dante Moore made some good decisions. He found Johnson in the back of the end zone. Johnson looked really good at the tight end, especially beyond the end line and some run games. I thought the run game was decently fine for what it was. Davison had a couple of things that he looked really good in. But I think it was the Evan Stewart and DeCorian Moore situations, like, okay, well, you're damn near returning everybody in your front seven. You're returning to explosive weapons. But Evan Stewart, like DeCorian Moore, you kind of expected. But a patellar tendon situation, you never know how kids are going to respond. Well, Joe, he catches a fade route from Dylan Raiola, which, by the way, a hell of a throw. A hell of a throw by Raiola in stride, and he cooks. And I think that's the thing that I walk away from the most. Because what do you want me to talk about? Because I charted this when I went and watched it this morning. Joe, in the third quarter, there were 17 straight plays where you threw the ball 8 yards or less, or you ran the football. Like, what? That's not who you're going to be. Dan later on in the day would say, "Guys, we were as vanilla as we can get." Joe, vanilla can be a fade route. I mean, we're throwing a fade route. I mean, there's nothing special about running a fade. Trips left, fade on the far right boundary. There's nothing special about that. But I just walk away from the wide receiver room. Can they be, because I think Iverson Hooks is a steal, by the way. Can that run game continue to emerge? And then the defense. Joe, that front seven is disgusting. Oh, our offensive line struggle. It better struggle. A brand new unit, if a brand new unit would have walked off in there and that D-line and in front seven didn't dominate, I would be asking the front seven, what have you been doing all offseason? I mean, seriously, that's what the thing you should look at. But there's no way that I come out of this spring not talking about DK Moore and talking about Evan Stewart and the way that they looked. And that was the problem for you last year, and you got four wide receivers that can play now. And by the way, can some of these freshmen step up? I think they're so much deeper at a position that, quite honestly, they just couldn't separate from a season ago. And you have a big body tight end who made a ridiculous catch as well. They looked really good.
I feel like the big thing that cost them against Indiana that we didn't really talk about, it definitely felt like they were outcoached, but it felt as though that they couldn't generate any big plays
right when
they needed to. They couldn't get those big splash plays. They now have an opportunity with Stewart and with Moore on the field and with Stewart have fully recovered now to be 10 times more productive. And I think that if Dante Moore just shows us a 10% progression and a little bit more calmness when he's facing pressure and he's in the pocket, improve his decision-making, if he becomes cleaner as a player, there's no doubt that Dante Moore can't become a top three pick like we were projecting this past year, but he's got a lot more competition for that spot and for him to be a Heisman finalist. He is going to have the best case, Blake, I think, for anybody to win the Heisman this upcoming year because he's going to have one of the best arsenals. Him and Arch Manning are going to have a lot of weaponry to throw to, but if they're going to look like this, going up against that defense, that secondary, and they're still able to get big plays like that, this Oregon offense is going to be so much more dangerous. I do really have
a situation.
Yeah.
Dean Finney, after what just happened a year ago.
I mean, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal
for how good he was.
It's a statement. You're putting a flag in the ground and saying enough is enough. It's exactly what he's doing. I mean, let's just be blunt here. It's not like Haven Finney was getting rolled over by dudes who didn't just get drafted, because he wasn't. And then you went out there on a fade route and put a flag in the sand and said, enough is enough. Evan Stewart, I felt like, did the same thing. Now, that front seven did cook. Sometimes it wasn't necessarily pretty either.
No. I think that both those things are where the big buy-in comes from. The other thing I would add, Dylan Raiola was interesting to watch. I don't know if I would come away from it thinking I was blown away by how he performed. And I don't think that we need to be blown away by how he performed, because he's not going to play this year. But I do think that
He made some big throws, though, man.
He did. And I saw a version of him that he's always been really natural, a bit inconsistent, but natural. I feel like we got back to the version of him where he's got the talent around him to like really maximize who he is as a player, because he can rip it. He can layer passes really well in tight situations. It's also like a weird observation. He looked leaner. I think that he might be in like better shape. He looks like he's gotten in better shape. Maybe I'm off base on that one, but it seems like there's already some pretty good returns for him deciding to effectively redshirt and to sit out this upcoming year.
Can I be completely blunt with you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I saw from Dylan Raiola this offseason so far?
What?
Nothing. Good.
That's a good point.
You're not the superstar anymore. You've kind of gotten a little bit humbled. Dan Lanning convinced you, listen, you're going to be behind more. You can see some action in some games, barring, God forbid, he got hurt. Okay? It's time for you to become a part of a team. Now, he didn't do what I asked him to do. Take number 15 off. Be number 14 or number 16. This whole Patrick Mahomes stick, it's over. Go and be who you can be. Be Dylan Raiola. But the simple fact that we didn't hear anything from him is the best thing to happen to him all offseason. He made a beautiful throw to as well. Yeah. And so, I like what I've seen from him. Look, I think Oregon's to me a top 2 to 3 team, and I don't think they're 3. I think if you told me after what I saw, if coming into the season, I'd probably have it Texas, Oregon, Ohio State.
By the way, just to correct you, Royal is wearing 8, by the way. So he did take
it. He wasn't wearing 15?
Yeah, he's wearing 8. Yeah, he's wearing 8 now.
Good for him. I take my statement back then. Good for him. Now I might actually like what he's doing. You know what? Dylan Raiola for Heisman 2027.
Hey,
no,
man.
I'm serious. I'm not playing. I'm dead ass serious. Take that whole stick and superstar bullshit that didn't amount to anything, and let's get to work. You're too talented. Like, don't Diego Pavio yourself. Which, by the way, I don't know if we're going to talk about that part. Don't be Diego Pavio. Be Dylan Raiola. Be who you are. Cut your hair. Wear a new number. We didn't hear from you all offseason. Good. Let's get to work. Because he's too talented, Joe.
I really think that there is going to be a world where he, in 2027, starts. Maybe he stays for 2 years, but I would imagine just one. And then goes on to be a high draft pick. I think that this is such a good situation for him.
Name a better quarterback room in the country better than Oregon's. Because it does not exist. Because you're potentially talking about two quarterbacks that can be drafted inside the top 10. Now, you could say maybe Alabama in a couple of years, but Elijah Haven's not on that roster. I mean, I'm trying to think of better quarterback rooms. I mean, maybe Sam Levitt and Hassan Longstreet. I don't know about that yet. Shit, Joe, I'm trying to
I don't think anyone's better. At the current moment in terms of the ability.
Maybe Texas, but we haven't seen enough from them.
Yeah, the Diabelle hasn't really. Ohio State would be the only other one that I would maybe bring up, because we talked about how talented Tavian Sinclair looked.
Yeah, you want Sinclair to start over Julian Sand.
I didn't say that.
Oh, sweet Jesus. He should. Anyway. All right. But I think they have the best quarterback room in the country. So we'll see. All right. Joe, anything else we need to get to before we wrap up here?
No.
How about, by the way, just throwing this out there, how about Landon Williams-Callis, the number one running back in the country? Guess where he's currently visiting?
Oh, is he at LSU right now?
No, he was at LSU this weekend. Guess where he's visiting?
Is he at Indiana? Is that what you were just with?
Indiana.
Dude, they've got a lot of big kids that were in Indiana this weekend, man.
Name a time that Indiana was getting visits from the number one running back in the country. Look at old Cignetti. By the way, watching Cignetti this weekend with a hat on. I can't. Cignetti, you didn't see him with the hat on?
No
way. No way. Take the hat off. He's like Matt Campbell for me now. Take the hat off.
I just realized we didn't get to the Indiana spring game because they played on freaking Thursday night.
So
awful.
During
the NFL draft.
So
he's smart.
Awful.
He knows no one's paying attention.
Before we leave, did you see people going after Cignetti for not being there with Mendoza?
He had the spring game. Why does that matter?
Yeah, but you could have you knew that the schedule that you knew he was going number one overall. You didn't have to play a spring game on a Thursday.
Yeah, but if he played the spring game on Saturday, there's preparation that goes into the spring game on Saturday. So what?
Yeah, I guess.
You wouldn't have been able to just get up and leave and then go beat Mendoza for a day.
Fernando Mendoza gets drafted number one by Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
The first commercial ESPN goes to is a LinkedIn commercial with Fernando Mendoza. You want to talk about marketing? Hella marketing.
He's very marketable, man. I'll tell you what.
My favorite thing right now is going on TikTok and watching people trying to or imitating Fernando Mendoza. It's freaking hilarious. Mm. I love this spaghetti and meatballs.
I'm excited to see what he does, dude. He's such a funny kid, man.
He's I guess that's what you call him. All right, we'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace.
What if the secret to better hair was doing less? Hair Story's Nuwash is a cleansing and conditioning cream that replaces shampoo and conditioner in one simple step. Its gentle, detergent-free formula cleans without stripping your hair and scalp, leaving hair softer, smoother, and ready to air dry beautifully with less styling and more time between washes. Rewrite your routine with Hair Story. If you're ready to make the switch, use code PODCAST15 at hairstory.com for 15% off your order.